Welcome to the Paragon Podcast, where we speak with local charities and changemakers to see how they're making a difference. I'm your host, Anthony Massimarini. Welcome back to the podcast. We return this week with another guest from a different part of the world. She hails from Fredericton, New Brunswick on the east coast of Canada. And those who are thinking that it doesn't count because she's domestic don't know exactly how big Canada is. Anyway, I'm going to pass it over to Erica to talk a little bit more about the organization that she's a part of, Opal Family Services.
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Erica Young, and I'm the director of Opal Family Services in Fredericton, New Brunswick. And we run several programs for individuals with disabilities. It could be physical disabilities or intellectual disabilities. And we also support their family members. That's in our title, Opal Family Services. So yeah, I guess we started our program about 35 years ago, and it was started by a group of local friends that got together to support one of their friends who was a mom, and she was struggling because she had two kids with really significant care needs and she needed a break. So this group of friends got together and kind of made a schedule and provided some support so that this mom could get a break. And then after that, they did a bit of a community needs assessment, and they realized that that was really important to a lot of families in our area. And so the organization was founded, and the charitable status was obtained, and been running strong in the community ever since.
So definitely humble beginnings, which is always nice to see.
Yeah, definitely. And it's been really like a community driven initiative all along. Like the vast majority of the work that we do is volunteer driven.
Right.
We have over 250 volunteers that work in many different ways to help support us. Yeah, really, we couldn't do it without all of the volunteers. That's really the heart of Opal. And we have a really small staff team. There's myself and two family support workers, and sometimes we get funding for an administrative assistant. Right now, we're only using volunteers for that role as well. So we're stretched like very thin. And the only exception is in the summer, we hire a lot of summer students and run another program that I'll talk more about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're a really small like core team. And with the support of many volunteers, we're able to have, I think, like a really big impact on the community and the families that we serve.
Well, that's great. That's small organization making a large impact in local community. And that's what we like to see. And that's what, frankly, why we wanted to feature you on the podcast today. One of the things that's mentioned pretty repeatedly on the website, and the last time I spoke with you, is this idea of respite, which is essentially a short period of rest. Why is this so important for families with child or adult dependents that have disabilities?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's really the core of what we do in all of our programs. And that really comes from that very original community needs assessment. And over the years, we've done a number of needs assessments and questionnaires and interviewing families and looking at research and data from across the country. And often the number one identified need for families who have a child or adult dependent with a disability is respite. So of course there's other needs as well, but one of the main things is that they need a break. And if you think about families like getting a babysitter, mm-hmm. it can be really challenging if their child has behavioral needs that are more complex or care needs that are more complex. A lot of our families wouldn't get the opportunity to have out-of-home respite if it weren't for our organization and the coordinated matching that we do with caregivers and families.
Right.
And also we have a respite apartment. So we run, we have a three-bedroom apartment that has a kitchen and a bathroom and all that stuff. So we kind of rent that out. I say rent, the families only pay $10. So it's really affordable. Typically it's a client and a caregiver who stay at the apartment while they're parents get a break. It could be the other way around if it's easier. It's really popular, especially on weekends. Sometimes there's not a lot of places that individuals who might use wheelchairs or other mobility equipment can go. You know, we have a lift to help people go from a wheelchair to a bed and back again. So like that doesn't exist in hotels or anywhere else. So
yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. So that's really important to a lot of our families, and often not just important, but the most important identified need. And that comes out through and through the research and just through getting to know our families. So whether we're matching caregivers and families with families, or whether we're running programming, like one of the goals of all of our programming is to provide quality care so that their parents or full-time caregivers can get a break.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, obviously breaks are important. I can imagine the work it takes to care for someone with a disability, especially when you have to deal with it 24/7.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like most, you know, like if you have an infant, yeah, they obviously need 24/7 supervision and care, but they usually developmentally grow out of certain stages and certain needs. Some of our children and adults still need that 24/7 supervision,
right,
or still don't sleep through the night, or still have care needs that require hands-on assistance with every task of daily living. So it becomes so much more crucial that families who are caring for people with high care needs like get a break and get that bit of respite. Does a world of good for their mental health and their other like relationships in their lives, whether it's other children or their grandparents or whoever. Like it really allows for people to take good care of themselves as well, so that they can continue the caregiving duties.
That's great. And so you mentioned you have the respite apartment. That's one of the many programs you offer. I have a short list here. So respite and support services. There's also youth groups, adult socials, and a recreational program. And then the one I want to focus a little bit more on now is Camp Wonder. The reason being that it's obviously very relevant, but also because you were involved in the creation of this program. So what was the goal of the program, and what inspired you to move forward with it?
Yeah, it's been a really fulfilling program. I've been with the organization for 3 years, and this is our third version, I guess, of Camp Wonder that's going on right now. We're so lucky in New Brunswick, I'll just say, that we're allowed to run camps this summer. Mm-hmm. I know some places in Canada, their camps are closed down, and it's just been really lucky with COVID that with some protocols in place, we're moving forward with our camps. So yeah, I think when I was leaving my last job, I worked for a summer at a camp. I'm a social worker by training, and I went and spent a summer at a residential camp that needed a social worker because there was a lot of kids with significant mental health challenges and behavior challenges and stuff like that. So I went and was working there when I applied to work at Opal. And I think that was one of the selling features, I guess, for the board of directors to choose me as the next director of Opal, was because of my background in social work and also working at camps, because I think that was something that the board and the organization has always valued, is being able to provide summer camps for kids that have special needs and can't always be accommodated or welcomed and included at other camps. So the first year we started, we ran 4 weeks of camps. We had a one-to-one staff to camper ratio, which we still have today. And so we had, I think, about between 7 and 10 campers per week that first year. And then the next year we ran the camp for 8 weeks. And that's what we're doing again this year. So we're now partnered with Special Olympics New Brunswick. I feel like that's a great fit. And we're trying to promote like collaboration, sharing resources, and all of those things in our community. This year, we were planning to welcome more neurotypical kids as well to really promote that inclusion piece. But then COVID really limited our ability to grow our numbers, because we have a strict cap of 15 kids. So
yeah.
But anyways, this year we're doing really well. We're providing a ton of quality childcare and respite along with camp activities. And we've really realized how important it is to be outdoors. Partly that was like driven by COVID. And we've taken a lot of day trips, like full day out going hiking and going to the beach and,
oh, that's awesome,
and stuff. And it's been really awesome that we were able to get, you know, enough drivers and enough life jackets and all the things that we need to do those outings, and I think it's made for a really fun summer for the kids who are attending.
No, it sounds like a great initiative. I know certainly for parents with young kids, these summer camps are of a special importance for them. So that's great. It's great to hear. And you mentioned COVID a little bit, how that's had an impact. Family services is something that's very much personal, and people have to be on site in order to receive these services. So how is Opal dealt with that, and how are they moving forward in this era of COVID?
Yeah, it was definitely really challenging, and it continues to affect, you know, everyone's daily lives and the way that the organization operates to some extent. So mainly, I think our families are, you know, a bunch of families that also have other challenges, right? And when COVID happens and people lose jobs and their income is affected and schools are closed down, like for our kids, like the schools closing down was a really big deal, because that's not just where they go to learn math and English and stuff. It's where they have EAs that support them, and they have their parents get respite, and they have sports and recreation activities, and they have social time, and that's part of their routine that's hard to deviate from sometimes. And parents are used to having that break. Again, all parents are, you know, affected, but I think when you add special needs into the mix, I think it's just more challenging. So we definitely had a lot of people calling us in crisis and also fearful. Sometimes, you know, physical and intellectual disabilities go hand in hand with asthma, you know, allergies, other immune compromising issues that make COVID even scarier. And definitely the financial piece was a big one. We had families that, you know, both parents were out of work. And until they could sort out EI or then CERB came into effect, like there were some people that were really panicking and, you know, rightly so. So we were kind of shifting our focus and providing support with food banks and with, you know, getting book bags of lunches that kids normally get at school, like home, and working with other community organizations to coordinate our families that were in the most need. We lost some funding ourselves, and obviously it's not a time in the early days, at least, that people were fundraising for us and making donations. Like everyone was in survival mode. So we thrive on donations and fundraising. That's like a big part of our revenue stream. So we had to cancel some of our, all of our spring fundraising initiatives, which, you know, was like, it was a big question mark whether or not camp could move forward. Even our wage subsidies for students were severely delayed. We ended up getting almost as many as we normally get, so that was okay, but it was a big question mark as to whether or not we were going to have enough staff to run our program. So it was definitely a challenge. Yeah, we've been, you know, here working full-time, now back at the office and advocating for our families. And one thing I will say is, like, there's a lot of vulnerable populations out there, and sometimes I think individuals with disabilities even fall to the bottom of the list of vulnerable populations. And like emergency funding went out for people with housing issues and people with food security issues, but people with disabilities have kind of been a bit looked over, I would say. So we've been here advocating and making sure that those basic needs were met, and also that emotional support was provided, and we gave advice as to the safest way to continue with respite. Definitely a lot of challenges, and we've just done our best to kind of roll with it and see how we can best support them. And it's really individual too, when people want to welcome a caregiver back into their home and all that. Yeah.
Well, Opal has certainly shown a lot of resilience over the past couple of months. It's definitely not easy for an organization like Opal to function. And so the fact that you're still running programs and you're still doing what you're doing is obviously pretty laudable. I also want to use what you said at the end of your answer there as a bit of a lead-in. You mentioned that a lot of people with disabilities are often overlooked, and a big theme with Opal is the idea of inclusion. And we decided on that as the title word for the podcast today.
Yeah.
So why is inclusion so important for Opal, and how is that trait integrated in your programs and the way that Opal runs its initiative?
Yeah, I think inclusion is essential, and we strive to promote inclusion in the community. And we also want to model that with our own programs and how we operate. You know, anyone is welcome to attend our programs. I mentioned like we wanted to have neurotypical kids be able to join our camp. Like we run a youth group and sometimes technically kind of age out of our programs, but if they want to continue coming to our youth group as young adults, like they're absolutely welcome. So we have several kids up to 25, 26 years old that continue to attend our youth group because they feel comfortable there and they thrive there. And we just don't see any need to like enforce age rules. And so yeah, people don't age out of our programs and you don't need to have a diagnosis to attend our programs. And there's a very inclusive and welcoming atmosphere at all of our programs that I think is unique and really important. And I think that's what drives people to want to attend. We have an adult group that's been running for 35 years. It was started, it was a volunteer initiative, and then Opal kind of adopted it about 15 or 18 years ago. And all we really do is rent a space. And how we have a staff that coordinates it, but it's still a volunteer-led initiative and up to 50 adults that attend every week. It's like just a social recreation program and it's part of their, it's like a staple in their lives. That's where they see their friends and have snack and play a game or go on a hike or do a scavenger hunt or whatever we're doing that week. And it's a very, very popular program. And I think that really speaks to the need for our community to continue to strive to be more inclusive, because I think those participants, like our adults, don't always feel welcome and included in the workplace or in other community groups, churches, service groups, sport, but they felt welcomed at our program. So we continue. But yeah, inclusion is really important to us, and we hope that we're a good example of that in the community with all of the programs that we run and just our attitude towards welcoming any and everyone and hoping that they have the same opportunities as individuals without any disabilities.
Yeah, no, of course. I think it's a really important message, and I think people who are listening would probably tend to agree. So with that, I want to ask you ways that people can connect with you or learn more about what Opal Family Services is doing and just follow the journey a little bit here. How can they do that?
We're fairly active on Facebook. So you can look up Opal Family Services on Facebook. And we have a website, opalfamilieservices.ca. And my contact information, my email is director@opalfamilieservices.ca. And I would love to hear from anyone.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks, Erica. Once again, you can follow, support, and learn more about Opal Family Services by checking them out on Facebook at Opal Family Services. Visit their website, www.opalfamilieservices.ca, or alternatively, you can email Erica at director@opalfamilieservices.ca. Thanks for tuning in, and remember, stay happy, stay hungry, stay humble. See you on the next one. You've been listening to the Paragon Podcast. To ensure that you don't miss an episode, subscribe or follow us on Instagram at paragon.podcast. Thanks for listening and see you next time.